head in the spirit of meditation. So, right in the beginning, we saw in this chapter that Lord tells Arjuna and through Arjuna, all of us, that one has to do this work, performance of work, as a discipline, as karma yoga, doing the work without aspiring for the results thereof. That has been a great theme that we have been discussing earlier throughout last five chapters, that working, we have to go on doing till we get perfection in this yoga. Working cannot be given up. It is, we feel that it is all the problems come because we do work, and if we don't do work, there will be no problems. Many times we get such thoughts when we are engaged in different works. We feel the heat there. When we interact with other people, our minds seem to or tend to get disturbed. So we feel, if there is no work, I will be so peaceful. But that is really not going to be the case. In fact, work properly performed will become the means, or in fact that is the only means for purification and for bringing our minds to a steady level where the desires will not be able to rattle us. So, when worked in this manner, one evolves. The verses number 2 and 3, they were about this different stages of evolution. A person evolves while practicing these disciplines. One evolves from one discipline to the next one. Like you have those hurdle race, different types of hurdles come, you know. You may have some crossbar there, you have to jump that first, and then there will be something else that you have to go through, and like that. So, one comes after another. Here in Providence also we have that one kind of race in Rhode Island, that there is running, and then there is bicycling, and then there is it is followed by swimming, and like that you complete it. So now you have to do it one after another. After you do, say, running, then starts bicycling or whatever. That order is important there. You cannot say that I will just start swimming right in the beginning. Well, you have to come there stage by stage. So, similarly, there is a stage when the desires in the mind, they are subdued by the practice of this karma yoga, yoga of action. One reaches a stage of calmness and purity. And then, now it is the time when you can really merge in meditation. Earlier, of course, one has to keep on making attempts. It is a practice, is important to sit quietly and do meditation, but it has to be accompanied with intense work. Now, therefore, he says that very person who earlier had the means to do this karma yoga now comes to a stage where that person is now able to give up work. And we discussed the examples last time that, well, the person who took the flight to go to San Francisco from Providence now got the plane, landed in San Francisco. Now his job is to get out of the flight. He has to come out of the plane. Earlier his job was to get into the plane. Now once he has landed at the destination, now what is the means is now to come out of the plane. So similarly, one takes up different works, and those works, if done properly in the spirit of yoga, then they build up our character, they purify our interior, the mind, and thus it gets calmed down. Now you can give up the work. So it is ladder is there. You go on climbing, and thus at a different stage of evolution, that very person, very beautiful word has been used, yoga rudhasya tasya eva, that very person who was earlier the aru ruksho, means desirous of performing this karma yoga, that very person now comes to a stage where that is not needed anymore. That very person, you know, that very person whom you kept on calling child, yes, he is a child. And then goes on, you know, now after 25 years, will you call that fellow a child? No, it is, a fellow may still be childish if the mental development is not there, but at least physically you won't call that person a child. That very person who was child, now has graduated or evolved to manhood. So you call that person as man now. So it is like that. This is a process of evolution. So this is to be seen. The next verse that we had hinted before closing discussion last Friday, that how to decide, you know, that is the fourth verse of the sixth chapter, that how to decide whether I have come to that stage where actions can be given up. Can one think just subjectively? Sometimes one feels, okay, I have been practicing this karma yoga, yoga of action for 10 years. Now I am perfected in that. So now, let me give it up. Is there a course given in terms of time, that 5 years that master's or PhD program, get into that and then you will come out, you get in to finish your PhD, after 5 years through that machine you come out as a PhD. So is there this kind of a time-bound program here, that you get into the school, that after finishing high school you get into the university for your undergrad program, and then after 4 years you come out as with a bachelor's degree? So is here something like that? That 5 years or 10 years of this karma yoga, and then I can give up this and then become a person of meditation. No, you cannot give up a time-bound program for that. People have to evolve there. That evolution is important. It cannot be even decided subjectively. It is not a matter of choice, like I like this or I like this. You cannot decide it by liking either. It is the stage of evolution that you are on. So, Lord clarifies in this verse that it is not just a matter of your choosing. I may think, I am a Swami now for last so many years, so now I probably don't need this discipline of yoga, I can give up work. Well, being Swami for so many years is not given as a criterion here. I have been frequenting to temples and the places of worship and all that for so many years. Does it make me automatically worthy of it? No guarantee, friends. It is not such a thing. It is how much transformation you have achieved in life That is the criterion. It is like when it is you get from here to Boston. Well, if you are driving, maybe, and if there is not much of traffic and all, if the conditions are fine, you can say maybe 1 hour or so. But it depends, you know, how fast you were driving, what were the traffic conditions, how many breaks did you take. It is like if you decide in between to go to a shop and spend 1 hour there, and then decide to get a cup of coffee and spend another hour there. So, then naturally, it will not be that after 1 hour you will get to the place. So, it depends on where you are. And that is told here, that what is the place for you to give up these activities in life.
यदा हि नेन्द्रियार्थेषु न कर्मसु अनुषज्यते सर्वसंकल्पसन्यासी योगारूढस्तदोच्यते. When one habitually renounces all desires and is no more attached either to sense objects or to actions, then one is said to have attained to yoga. So there is this objective criterion for that. That when you are not getting titillated or attracted towards the sense objects, when you are not agitated by the sense objects, when your mind stays calm, when you are not attracted or repelled from them, then that is one thing. And then you are not attached also to actions. It is a very important thing that we get so much attached, involved into actions. That means we still have to practice the karma yoga, doing work without attachment. When one is able to keep on doing work without least attachment, then it is the person has graduated. Now he can go out of that gate. At Brown University, you know, there is a gate that on that side. It lets the students in when in the beginning. And then that is opened only after the graduate ceremony, that you go out from that gate. Till then, you have to be there. So this is a discipline, you know, like that you start karma yoga, you will be out only after you complete the course, not the time thing, but when you attain that qualification. Once you attain that qualification, then it is possible for you. When the different objects of sense pleasures will not have any control over you, they will not be able to bother you, then only that is one thing. And then you are not attached to any work. That is... please let us remember, not being attached to any work does not mean not doing any work. There are many lazy people who don't do any work. That is not the condition mentioned here. That a person told that, well, I can do all the works, but I have some small requirement that before doing any work I need to eat. The employer said, fine, you know, we can give you to do something to eat. And after eating, I need some sleep. A little bit of sleep is required. Okay, fine. And then he said, after sleeping, I need to eat. So now what is the end result? This fellow will be just eating and sleeping.
So, such not doing any work is not what is hinted here. The person is yet to get start working. He has not even entered the arena of Karma Yoga, let alone completing it. So, one has to learn to do intensely. The work has to be done with full concentration, full mind, and yet with detachment. This is a discipline that has to be learned. One has to work with full sincerity, concentration, focus, everything. And dedication has to be there also. And yet, one should be detached. That yes, whenever it is work is done, free from it. And no lingering, that tendency there, that, oh, well, I should get this from this work, or how nicely I do, I care for the work, if I don't do, it will go bad. No such ideas. Work was for your development. So, one has to see this. It is not easy, friends. And with work, so much of attachment is developed. My work, my job, nobody should touch it. It is, we are so attached to that. And it goes on developing like that even without one's noticing it. It is difficult to notice this. As the time passes, people are doing that work. And then it is difficult to spend time of retirement. That time comes when you have to give it up. But still, remnant is there, and so keep on doing something. So, just because you have been doing the work for a long time doesn't mean that you are detached from it. You may feel disgust for it. That is not same as detachment. It is a negative attachment, that's all. It is not detachment. Feeling disgust is also same thing. Your mind is there in a different way. We shall see these things as we proceed. But very important thing, that is what Lord says, that this is when you should see that time to give up the work has come. Now, naturally, when this high ideal is placed before us, the mind tends to feel a sense of depression. Oh my goodness, where am I? My mind gets disturbed by even a little suggestion of sense pleasures. Even a little chocolate can titillate me, let alone many other different pleasures. And then how can I attain to this state where no sense pleasures will have any control over me, where my mind will become completely independent of their bondage? How can I reach that stage? So, my mind tends to get into despondency. The great master psychologist Lord Krishna immediately notices this and addresses to Arjuna and to all of us. Great, these two verses are so powerful. I have always been helped by these verses when there is spirit is down, when the mind is not very enthusiastic about spiritual practice, when there is a little bit of despondency setting into the mind, then these verses act like great uplifters. And how do they uplift? Those verses directly don't uplift you, but awaken your latent or the sleeping, dormant energies. It says,
उद्धरेदात्मनात्मानम् नात्मानमवसादयेत् आत्मैव ह्यात्मनो बन्धु आत्मैव रिपुरात्मनः. One should raise oneself through this self and never lower oneself. For this self alone is one's friend and the self alone is one's enemy. This is a very special feature of Vedanta. Swami Vivekananda, in many of his lectures, especially you will find it in Practical Vedanta, mentions that Vedanta puts all the onus on your shoulders. You have to lift yourself up. Not some other savior will come and lift you and take you out. Don't keep on looking for that. It is you yourself have to take the burden of uplifting yourself. Uddhared atmanatmanam. It is your responsibility, primarily speaking. Who is responsible primarily for making you calm? Not somebody else, you yourself. It is very important that we just as something rattles our mind, to keep our mind calm also is our responsibility. We have to do it ourselves. Nobody is going to do it for us. It is because it is something quite internal. Now let us not imagine that some god or some other being will come, some guru will come and lift me out. Even Lord Krishna is telling this to Arjuna. He himself is telling that, look, it is you who have to do it yourself. Uddhared. Atmanatmanam uddharet, lift up, take out of this mire of worldliness, lift yourself, and by what force? Atmana atmanam, it is by your own diligence, your own that spirit of evolving, that is what you should bring forth. Most important thing psychologically. Why so? Because we many times feel, oh, nothing for me in this world. This world is all for the crooks. Because I am an honest man, I have to suffer so much. We are worried. Not that we are really great, this honest people, but still we feel that, oh, because of my honesty I have to suffer. Look at those evil people, how they are rolling in prosperity. This world is like that. The mind tends to go into, or self-cursing, that, oh, I have been made like that. I have no further way to go. These days, the very bad or very wrong ideas come to people through so-called science. Those conclusions are as such not wrong, but they are taken in a very wrong light. Like seeing everything having that genetic. Oh, my genetic, my DNA is like that, so I have to be a bad person, what to do? I have to be a lazy person because that God gene is not in me. It is all genetic, Swami, have you not read the modern research? Everything is determined by your genetic code. Your DNA has all that information already there. So I can't do anything. It is my DNA determines everything. And so therefore, since in my DNA it is there that I am always going to be a morose and despondent and depressing person, so it's like that. It is, and then gene means it came to me from my parents. So my parents are responsible, not me.
For my present condition, it is my parents who are responsible. And then there is no solution. It is, what does it indicate? So, don't make any effort to better yourself. Because if it is in your gene, it will come automatically. If it is not in your gene, it won't come automatically. And so, just be as you are. What a terrible, unreal philosophy that is being put or presented to us. What a terrible psychological impact it has created. It is simply, you know, ruining the minds of people. That is what that means. Here is the solution that no, that is not the case. It may be in your gene, but how your gene got made? You yourself are the maker of it, and therefore you yourself can unmake it too. You have to raise yourself. Like that story I think I had told you some time back, a man with his wife and the wife's mother, mother-in-law, and they were going for some hunting expedition. There were in the forest lions and tigers and all were there. So when their jeep came to a place, suddenly this lady looked, her mother was sitting in the back seat, and she didn't find her mother. And she said, "Oh, Tommy, stop. My mom is not seen here. Where is she? We have to find her." And then Tom stops and says, "Come on, let us go." He picked up his gun and then started looking. And in a clearing in the dense forest, they saw a horrible sight, that there was a big lion. And this mother-in-law was cornered there. The lion was probably just ready, getting ready to pounce or what. So this his wife said, "Oh, Tom, you have to do something." And Tom just turned his back and told his wife, "You see, the lion has got himself into trouble, so let him find his own way out, you see." It is. So, since he has got himself into trouble, let him find his way. So, if we have got into trouble, it is for us to find our way out, you see. Nobody else is going to come to your rescue. No, my guru is very powerful. He will take me out. Oh, well, it is the power of the guru and all will work only if you are making efforts. If it is up to you, don't, if you are being in depressed spirits, "No, I can't do anything, I don't find joy in the doing all this spiritual practice," it is, then no guru, no God, nobody can help you. So, therefore, this is a great secret. It is our responsibility. Let us not keep on blaming society. That is another abstract to blame, you know. Society these days is like this, terrible, very bad. In earlier days, it is in the Vedic times or 5,000 years back, it was so nice. Well, what is the use of saying all this? It doesn't help at all. Who make the society after all? We make the society. A government should do all this and all that. What is government again? It is same idea as society. Who make the government? We make the government. So why blame it? Do whatever best we can do. So this is an important message of Vedanta, and that we have to take up the responsibility ourselves. Swami Vivekananda was never tired of repeating this, that those who don't believe in themselves are atheists. He said that, well, old religion told you that if you don't believe this God or that God, then you are atheist. But the new religion says that the one who doesn't believe in oneself is atheist. If you don't believe in yourself and believe all the 330 million gods that you have, and Hindus have a lot of different god categories, 330 million according to some source. So he says that even if you believe in all these 330 million gods, but don't have faith in yourself, then you cannot be saved by anyone. So have faith in yourself. That is the key to success. He therefore said that Americans are better Vedantins than you Indians. He told the Indians that they are better Vedantists, better Hindus, because they have more faith in themselves. You just look at towards the face of somebody, that somebody will bring you some money or some freedom or something. You look at the face towards the face of somebody else. Your destiny is what is. It is in your hands. Don't just keep on thinking that somebody else is going to help you. So, a very important message that you are your own friend. It is, what is our friend then? When we are our friend and when we are our enemy, that also is to be understood. That when am I my enemy of myself? He says in the next verse,
Bandhuratmanatmanastasya yenatmaivatmanajitah anatmastu shatritve varte tatmaiva shatruvat anatmanastu shatritve varte tatmaiva shatruvat. And the next verse says, jitatmanah prashantasya paramatma samahitah shitoshna sukhadukheshu tatha manapamanayoho. The sixth verse, the meaning is this, that to him who has conquered the self, body and senses by his self, that self is his friend. For the uncontrolled man, however, the self alone is adverse like an enemy. And then the seventh verse gives the idea of what is this controlling the mind. The self of one who is self-controlled and serene is alone poised in heat and cold, happiness and misery, as also in honor and dishonor. That is the meaning of control, having the control of mind. That when our mind is under our control, then it is our friend, best friend. See, the idea here is very important, that mind is our instrument, the main instrument by which we get everything in life. The mind is that instrument, and that instrument is useful only if we are able to control it. Like, just to give an everyday example, your car, if you are driving the car, it is useful to you if it is under your control. Imagine what will happen if the car is not under your control. Will it be a pleasant journey? It certainly will not. It will not take you to the destination. In fact, you may reach to the most undesired destination and make some other also get there. So, it is
very important that we have to have the control over the instrument that we are using. I have some instrument, you know, that some modern phone. Now I don't know how to use it properly. The many of those intricacies in that, I don't know how to use. It is a smartphone, and so requires a smart person also to use it, you see. And so I find it sometimes very difficult. That how all those different things to be used, it suddenly does not respond to what the buttons I press, and very frustrating. And then I blame, hey, what a phone is this? It is not to be blamed, it is okay, but I don't have the skills to properly use it. So our mind is a very potent instrument, provided we know how to use it. If it is under our control, then it is our friend. It is in fact our best friend. Then we can get everything in life through that, because it is capable of giving us everything. A mind has everything with it. If we learn how to control it, there is nothing in the world that we won't get. Everything can be gotten through control of mind. So, it is such a powerful instrument. So, the more we develop control over it, the more our lives become happy, purposeful, and it marches towards the goal. The less control we have, the difficult becomes the journey. If the control is not there, then it becomes a big enemy. In fact, nobody else can hurt us as an uncontrolled mind. We know it by our own experience. Who hurts us most? Our own mind. Not the neighbors, not the society, not somebody else. In fact, by putting the blame on somebody else, we are just delaying the solution or denying the solution. If the diagnosis is wrong, then the remedy is far away. So if the diagnosis is that somebody else is responsible for my suffering, wrong diagnosis, and the remedy also is therefore far away. The right diagnosis is my mind is not under control, and that is why it is behaving with me like this, inimical behavior of mind to itself. It is important, you know, that we learn these things. I'll quote from Swami Ranganathananji's book, this about Bhagavad Gita, in 3 volumes. I use this book mostly for our this class. So I quote from his explanation on this verse. Very important that how we keep on piling up all negativity in our minds by thinking like that. One becomes one's own friend when one has conquered oneself, but to the unconquered self, he or she is inimical and becomes like an external enemy. These are all profound psychological insights embedded in these verses. When you discipline this sensory system, this psychic system, you develop great character strength. Then you become your own friend. But the other way, anatmanastu shatrutve, when you leave the mind and the sensory energies to themselves, and you don't discipline them, you don't train them, then you become your own enemy. This is the teaching. How much it means to all of us in the development of character. Always complaining against others is not good. In fact, the complaining attitude is a very poor attitude for a human being, and many people have this complaining attitude, always complaining against this, against that, against this person and this situation and so forth. And then comes resentment, resenting like this. Oh, this has been done. I carry in my heart one resentment, a second resentment, and so on. I once read in a sentence in an American journal years ago. It said, "Blessed is the heart that doesn't collect resentments." You go on collecting resentments from morning till evening. By the time you are 40 or 50, your heart is full of complaints, full of resentments. What has happened to you? You have become your own enemy number one. This is what happens if we do not make concerted attempt to rein in the forces of mind. And this is all this sixth chapter, we will see most part is devoted to that. How to discipline the mind. We all want to discipline the mind, but we tend to forget that it demands a disciplined effort for a long time. Lot of perseverance and discipline and commitment is required for that. It doesn't come just by wishing, let my mind be controlled. That won't work. Just as if you say that Charles may say, let me be millionaire and just sit there, it will not be happening that way. You have to work towards it. Then only it can happen. It is by proper efforts put in that the mind gradually can take up the proper shape. It is unfortunately, the goal is so alluring, you know, that I have controlled the mind, and then you start imagining what you are going to do after controlling the mind. But what about actually controlling it? This idea that, oh, come on, let me think first what I will do after the mind is under control, shows that you have lost the control of mind, whatever little you had. So the means, they bring the end. And so we have to hold on to the means, and the end will automatically come. Swami Vivekananda's that beautiful lecture given in Pasadena, California, Work and Its Secret, a great lecture where he presents in a very forceful manner this connection between the means and the end has to be looked into, has to be understood. And thus, when we perfect the means, when we put in, hold on to those means, the end must come. It is this secret is to be understood, that I have to put in efforts commensurate to the result that I am seeking. I am seeking the great result of control of mind. Look at, you know, for even most ordinary results, how much effort one has to put in to get a master's degree. How much effort one has to put in. A lot of study, hours and hours of study has to be to go on. Years after years one has to keep on working at it. Then some success comes. And it is very ordinary something. These days so many people get masters and PhD, especially in the university areas. They say that there in North Carolina there is a triangle area, so many universities, and so many PhDs, highest density of PhD. Throw a stone and most likely it will fall on the head of a PhD. So that is what is said about that. So it is a commonly achieved something, not very uncommon. But control of mind is not that easy. It is a much higher a goal in life. And so we can just proportionately think how much more and how much more disciplined effort has to be put in with commensurately more perseverance and tenacity. All these things are very important. So therefore the next verse that we read says that look, jitātmanah prashantasya, that when your mind starts becoming calm down, as you start, the mind gets conquered, a sense of calmness. It is not calmness of being just not doing anything or lazy person, that is not calmness. Or if you go to some place in Himalayas or some solitary forest, a nice scenic place, and your mind gets a little that feeling of calmness, that is not what is mentioned here. Calmness is when you have your instruments under your control. That is a calmness. Like you are driving, the car is behaving fine, and it is under your control, there is no such that. Then you have a peace of mind there. So that is that calmness, jitātmanah, when you have conquered the mind. To the extent you have conquered the mind, what effect will be seen? Prashantasya. There will be a peace, a very palpably felt peace in life. And then, paramātmā samāhitah. There will be, samāhitah is a very beautiful word, that the whole personality will be properly harmonized and tuned up. See, look at, you know, that if we take a look at an uncontrolled mind, what is happening? Different aspects of our personality go against each other. They are at loggerheads. The intellect fights with emotions. And our physical habits, they again fight with both of these. Our own faculties, you know, they are not harmoniously joined with each other. They keep on fighting amongst themselves. So what to speak of peace of mind? Suppose there are lot of disturbances going on inside. Imagine the terrorism, you know, that that is going on in our mind. Because the different faculties of our personality, they do not properly cooperate and align with each other. And thus it creates lot of tension. Here, this, as the mind is brought under control, another effect is an harmonization. Everything gets properly tuned up, collected together, and our behavior will not then depend on the external circumstances. This is a great achievement, friends, a very important thing for our progress. That the situations will be, you know, that there will be, sometimes it will be very cold, sometimes it will be very hot, and sometimes there will be some pleasant situations, sometimes not pleasant situations. But in all these, a person who has this control of mind is focused on the goal, doesn't care about those things. Well, in life sometimes it is heat. Those who have the habit of complaining, a little cold, I'm dying by cold. A little warm, then put on the fans. One has to learn to keep the mind calm in those situations. You have to deal with them, that's all. If it is cold, well, put on something warm. You cannot make the seasons change at your this thing will. It is going to be, but we spend lot of time in brooding over those things and criticizing them, that why there is so much of cold. Okay, go on brooding over it. Is it going to reduce it? No. I have seen people, very nice, very inspiring, that in sometime very oppressive external situation, and the mind is kept so calm. I was talking to one Swami about when he was to come where I used to be earlier, and we had invited him to give a talk, and so he was coming, and suddenly there were some problems in the travel to the trains, and this, they got cancelled due to weather. So he decided to take another route, very long and torturous. And then I called him and said that it is very troublesome route that you have to take. I am sorry. He asked, "Can you make it any better?" Said, "No, then why talk about it? It is, well, if you cannot do anything better, let me just come with whatever is available." So, it is like that. I have seen him so calm. Another time I was sitting with that Swami in his room, and he prepared nice coffee for us. Myself and another friend was there, and then he prepared some nice coffee, and then we had coffee. It was very educative to see him preparing coffee, the exact movements of the hands, fingers, taking the right utensil, right amount of all everything, and very calmly he prepared, gave it to us, we had it, and then as it happens in India many places, many times, I went to wash the cup, there was no water, running water at the faucet, no water at all there. So, we say, we're kind of frustrated, "Oh Swamiji, we have to leave this unclean." "No, no, no, you can wash, I will show you how to wash it." And he took just a little water and showed that how all these three cups can be properly washed by using just a little water. And no grumbling, "Oh, what, this water is not there, and this water supply system is terrible, and what is the use of, grumbling?" Never grumbled. And a great lesson. These are all very practical things to learn in life, that grumbling and resenting and complaining is not the way to better your life. So friends, we will continue this study next Friday. Any questions? Yes, Charles?
If you said the crooks and the government are not the enemy, it's the self that's the enemy, then why is Krishna encouraging Arjuna to fight with the Kauravas, who are the crooks in the government?
Well, it is the Kauravas are not just the crooks and the government. It is he is primarily encouraging Arjuna to fight with himself first. It is Arjuna had lot of those grievances against them, and so they have to be eliminated. It is for that he is training him, that fight against the anger in you. So fight Kauravas, fine. You have your duties in life, do that as your duties, not out of anger. Don't fight with them. So he says, Yudhyasva Vigata Jvaraha, great statement in the third chapter, that fight, but without that anger and fever of resentment and irritation. Get rid of it.
Now, the Ramakrishna order doesn't participate in politics at all. If they were around back then, would he have said...
Well, that is a hypothetical question, you know, what would happen there. Every organization has its sphere of work. You cannot do everything, you know. Just as, why don't you go and work in some other place here only? Well, this is your sphere of work. You cannot be working in everything. So, there are better ways that are suited for our life and our purpose than politics. So it is not that it is a rule as such, a general rule. Maybe in future it may get changed, who knows, but the important thing is that everywhere there are the areas which you can work in better than the other which you cannot work better.
I was wondering if it was because Arjuna was of the warrior caste and the Ramakrishna order or more of the priestly caste.
No, it is not like that. No, no, no. So let us conclude with the closing prayers.
Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarehi Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha-padmad-vinasrita Ekam Shastram Devaki-putra-gitam Eko Devo Devaki-putra-eva